and the push of the stone rose full of a fragrance and unyielding weight. Where they all stared, past their tree was another tree, and beyond that another and another, all the way down the bank of the river, all towering and darkened in the stone. The outside world is full of endurance, said Doc, full of endurance. Robbie Bell and Sam squatted down low and embraced each other from the start. Runs in our family to get struck by lightning, said Robbie Bell. Lightning drawed a pitchfork right on our grandpappy's cheek, stayed till he died. Pappy got struck by some bolts of lightning and was dead 3 days, dead as at their axe. There was a succession of glares and crashes. This one's going to be either me or you, said Sam. Here come a little bug. If he go to the left, be me. And to the right, be you. But at the next flare, a big tree on the hill seemed to turn into fire before their eyes. Every branch, twig, and leaf, and purple cloud hung over it. Did you hear that crack? Asked Robbie Bell. That were its bones. Why do you little niggas talk so much? Said Doc. Nobody's profiting by this information. We always talk this much, said Sam, but now everybody's so quiet they hear us. The great tree split and on fire fell roaring to earth. Just at its moment of falling, a tree like it on the opposite bank split wide open and fell in two parts. Hope there ain't going to be no balls of fire come rolling over the water and fry all the fishes with their scales on, said Robbie Bell. The water in the river was filled with sudden currents and whirlpools. The willow trees bent almost to the surface, bowing one after another down the bank. A great curtain of wet leaves was borne along before a blast of wind, and every human being was covered. Now us got scales, wailed Sam. Us is the fishes. Hush up, little old children, said Virgil. This isn't a way to act when somebody takes you out to drag a river. Poor drowned lady's ghost, I bet it's scarier than us, said Sam. All I hope it is us don't find us, screamed Robbie Bell. William Wallace bent down and knocked their heads together. After that, they clung silently in each other's arms, with two heads resting with wind-filled cheeks and tight closed eyes, one upon the other, till the storm was over. Right over yonder is Dover, said Virgil. We've come all the way, William Wallace. You've walked on a sharp rock and cut your foot open. In Dover, it had rained, and the town looked somehow like new. The wavy heat of late afternoon came down from the water tank and fell over everything like shiny mosquito netting. At the wide place where the road was paved and patched with tar, it seemed newly embedded with Coca-Cola tops. The old circus posters on the store were nearly gone, only bits like snowflakes of white horses clinging to its side. Each with his counted fish on a string, the members of the River Dragon Party walked into Dover. They went toward the town well, and there was Hazel's mother's house, but no sign of her yet. They all drank a dipper of the water, and still there was not a soul on the street. Even the bench in front of the store was empty, except for a little wet corn-shuck doll. After one moment, all the bird dogs woke up to see the Doyle's dogs, and such a large number of men and boys materialized suddenly with such a big catch of fish, and they ran out barking. The Doyle dogs joyously barked back. Then one after another, people began to look out of the store and out of the post office. In the cafe, a nickel clattered inside a music box, and a love song began to play. The whole town of Dover began to throb in its wooden tin like an old tired heart when William Wallace and his men started walking down the street carrying the fish, so drenched, exhausted, and muddy that no dry person could help but admire them. William Wallace walked as though he did not see anybody or hear anything, yet he carried his great string of fish held high where it could be seen by all. Virgil came next, imitating William Wallace exactly. Then the mightiest Doyles, crowded by the Malones, who were holding up their alligator, tossing it in the air like a father tossing his child. Following behind, at the back, strolled Doc with Sam and Robbie Bell, still chanting in his wake. Grady, with his head ducked stiff as a rod, walked with a limp, angry and unapproachable. Under his breath, he was whispering, "Sty, sty, get out of my eye and get on somebody passing by." He traveled on with narrowed shoulders and kept his eye unerringly upon his little brother, wary and at the same time proud. Brucey, making a twanging noise with his lips, had shot forth again, and he was darting everywhere at once, delighted and tantalized, running in circles around William Wallace, pointing to his fish. A frown of pleasure, like the print of a bird's foot, was stamped between his faint brows, and he trotted in some unknown realm of delight. "Did you ever see so many fish at one time?" said the people in Dover. "Is that all the fish in Pearl River? For how much would you get rid of all your fish? Everybody's. How much?" "Take 'em free," said William Wallace. "Dover can have 'em. I want my wife," he yelled. Just at the moment, Hazel's mother walked out of her front door. "You can't head her mother off. Here she comes now in full bloom," Virgil said. "William Wallace Jameson, does Hazel know where you are this minute? Did you come gallivanting out with a bunch of useless boys and leave her at home?" Hazel's mother called. But William Wallace gave her just a polite nod and turned his back on her and on everybody for that matter, and that was the breaking up of the party. Just as the sun went down, Doc climbed his back steps, sat in his chair on the back porch where he sat in the evenings, and lighted his pipe. William Wallace hung out the net and came back, and Virgil was waiting for him so they could say good evening to Doc. "All in all," said Doc, "I've never been on a better river dragon. I've seen better behavior. If it took catching catfish to move the Rock of Gibraltar, I believe this outfit could move it." "Well, we didn't catch Hazel," said Virgil. "What did you say?" said Doc. "He don't really pay attention," said Virgil. "I said we didn't catch Hazel." "Who says Hazel was to be caught?" asked Doc. "Girls don't just haul off and go jumping in the river to get back at their husbands. They got other ways." "Didn't you ever think she was in there?" asked William Wallace. "The whole time?" "Not particularly," said Doc. "He's just smart," said Virgil, putting his hand on William Wallace's arm. "It's only because we didn't find her that he wasn't looking for her." "I'm beholden to you for the net anyway," said William Wallace, "but that's all." "You're welcome to borrow it again," said Doc, "next time." On the way home, Virgil kept saying, calm down, William Wallace." "If he wasn't such an old skinny man, I'd have wrung his neck for him," said William Wallace. "He had no business coming." "He's too big for his britches," said Virgil. "Don't nobody know everything. And just because it's his net. If it wasn't for being polite to old men, I'd have skinned him alive," said William Wallace. "I guess he don't really know nothing about wives at all. His wife's so deaf," said Virgil. "He don't know Hazel," said William Wallace. "I'm the only man alive knows Hazel. Would she jump in the river or not? And I say she would. She jumped in because I was sitting on the back of my neck in a debt singing, and that's just what she ought to done. Doc ain't got no right to say one word about it." Calm down, William Wallace," said Virgil. "If it had been you that talked like that, I'd have broke every bone in your body," said William Wallace. "Just let you talk like that. You're my age and size." "But I ain't gonna talk like that," said Virgil. "What have I done the whole time but keep this river dragon going straight and running even without no hitches? You couldn't have drugged the river a foot without me." "What are you talking about? Without who?" cried William Wallace. "This wasn't your river dragon. It wasn't your wife." He jumped on Virgil and they began to fight. "Let me up," Virgil was breathing heavily. Say it was my wife. "Say it was my rubber dragon." "Yours." Virgil was on the ground with William Wallace's hand putting dirt in his mouth. "Say it was my net." "Your net." "Get up then." They walked along getting their breath and smelling the honeysuckle in the evening. Virgil told William Wallace good night and went into his own house, and the door shut on him. When he got to his own house, William Wallace saw to his surprise that it had not rained at all. But there curved over the roof was something he had never seen before as long as he could remember, a rainbow at night. In the light of the moon, which had risen again, it looked small and of gauzy material, like a lady's summer dress, a faint veil through which the stars showed. He went up on the porch and in at the door, and all exhausted, he'd walked through the front room and through the kitchen when he heard his name called. After a moment, he smiled, as if no matter what he might have hoped for in his wildest heart, it was better than that to hear his name called out in the house. Then she opened the bedroom door with the lamp in her hand, and there she stood. She was not changed a bit. "How do you feel?" he said. "I feel pretty good, not too good," Hazel said, looking mysterious. "I cut my foot," said William Wallace, taking his shoe off so she could look at the blood. "How in the world did you do that?" she cried with a step back. "Dragging the river. But it don't hurt any longer." "You ought to have been more careful," she said. "Supper's ready. And I wondered if you would ever come home, if it would be last night all over again. Go and make yourself fit to be seen," she said. After supper, they sat on the front steps a while. "Where were you this morning when I came in?" asked William Wallace when they were ready to go in the house. "I was hiding," she said. "I was still writing on the letter, and then you tore it up. Did you watch me while I was reading it?" "Yes, and you could have put out your hand and touched me. I was so close. I was just behind the pantry door." But he bit his lip and gave her a little pat and slap, and then turned her up and spanked her. "Do you think you'll do it again?" he asked. "I'll tell my mother on you for this. Will you do it again?" "No," she cried. "Then pick yourself up off my knee." It was just as if he had chased her and captured her again. She lay smiling in the crook of his arm. It was the same as any other chase in the end. "I will do it again if I get ready," she said. "Next time will be different, too." Then she was ready to go in and rose up and looked out from the top step, out across their yard where the china tree was and beyond into the darkness. He climbed to his feet, too, and stood beside her, trying to look where she looked. And she took him by the hand and led him into the house, smiling as if she was smiling down on him. Thank you.